Good morning. Good morning. Is the microphone working and on and stuff? Yeah? Is it all working? Casper, can you hear at the back? Can you hear okay? Yeah. Just to say right at the very beginning, Simon has written today's talk and is unwell, so I volunteered to read Simon's talk. So thank you to him. I know he's watching online, so I really am on best behaviour, because if I change so much as a syllable, I won't hear the end of it for weeks. You've got Bibles on your tables. If you'd kindly turn to, there we go, page 987 and Luke chapter 12. Jackie's going to come and read verses 22 to 34. Thank you, Jackie.
Luke 12:22. Don't worry. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They don't sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you can't do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wildflowers grow. They don't labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And don't set your heart on what you'll eat or drink. Don't worry about it. For the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that won't wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
Thank you, Jackie, very much. I should say that there are a couple of stories about Simon in here. So when I say I later on, it's not me, it's Simon. If that's confusing, come and see me afterwards. Has anyone here ever trained for a race like a marathon, a long-distance cycle ride, a long swim or something? How did it affect your life in the run-up to it? Each of us will go through times in life where our priorities shift because we want something a lot. Maybe we need to pass an exam or an assessment to get to the next stage at work, or to be able to study where we want to, or we want to lose weight in order to make our life healthier, or we want to throw off an addiction or recover from an injury. These things require focus and for you to set your heart on achieving it. And sometimes, in order to achieve it, other things need to fall by the wayside, and there's a war between competing desires. You want to go out with your friends, but you know that unless you put in the hours in revision, you won't achieve that exam result, unlocking the promotion at work. You want to eat what you want, but you know that you need to cut down on this or that to get healthy. Which of these competing desires will win? It depends which is the strongest, which you set your heart on. I have an inspiring story for this morning about someone who overcame obstacles and achieved his dream by being single-minded. And he's from East London as well. This will make you proud to be an East Ender. And this is from the Metro on the 19th of January. Any heavyweight champion will tell you that getting to the top is hard, but staying there is harder. This is the big challenge that Lee Wakefield from Dalston, East London, faced at the beginning of 2022. After being crowned the, quote, number one buyer of Quaver crisps, close quote, in his Sainsbury's, all he wanted to do was retain the title. Such goals take sweat, determination and hard work, but it all paid off this week. Lee took to Twitter to announce that he had made crisp history after becoming the top buyer of Quavers at his local supermarket for the second year running. And he wrote, "Very proud to defend my title as the number one buyer of Quavers at the big Sainsbury's. To scoop the award once is an achievement, but to do the double is unprecedented. It's another proud day for me and my family." Lee also tweeted Walker's Crisps, which owns the brand, and asking them to be the face of Quavers. So far, the company has not commented on the offer from the champion, but a comment read, "Hard graft pays off. Nothing but respect for those numbers." Fellow crisp fanatics were quick to congratulate Lee on his success. And one man, Daniel Eckersley, commented, "I understand if you win it three times, you get to keep Gary Lineker." This morning's passage is all about what we set our heart on and how that impacts what we do with our money. Look at it with me. It's about what we treasure, what we set our hearts on, and what we seek. These are the things that will drive our actions. Verse 29, "Do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink." Verse 31, "Seek his kingdom." Verse 34, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus talks about two bogus things that we might set our hearts on, and then what we should set our hearts on and why. So, verse 22. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear." It appears that some that Jesus was speaking to had their primary focus on what they ate and what they wore. Why these things? Well, let's take worrying about food first. These days, if you ask someone about what their concerns are over food, then some might say, "Am I eating too much of the wrong stuff? Am I eating food that was produced without doing too much damage to the climate? Am I eating food that involves cruelty to animals?" That's not the concern here. The concern here is this: will I have any food to eat? We all know that we're in a cost of living crisis these days, but whatever pressures we face these days, the pressures in Jesus' times would have been worse. With no social security, food banks, or such like, people were likely to starve if they fell on hard times or if the harvest failed. What Jesus is talking about here is people focusing on food security, not how much rainforest might have been cut down to bring you your burger. Do you see that from the example that Jesus uses from the natural world? Look at verse 24. "Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them." Do you see that reference to storeroom and barns? People in those days would get their food security by being able to store up food in storerooms or barns. That's how you knew you would survive the winter, by having enough food set aside. People were worried about being secure. People were worried about being safe. Jesus then moves on to talk about people's concerns over what to wear, verses 27 and 28. Consider how the wild flowers grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet, I tell you, not even Solomon, in all his splendor, was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? So what were people's concerns about what to wear? If I asked you today about why you might be concerned about what to wear, you might say, I need to go out and I don't know whether to take a waterproof. Or maybe I need to go into the office, but I haven't been in for a while and I don't really know what to wear with the office dress code. But that's not the concern here. Look at the example that Jesus uses here from the natural world. Consider how the wild flowers grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet, I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. We're talking about splendor, about standing out, being more attractive because of what you wear. We're talking using money to become more popular. Look at me, I'm someone important. Pay attention to me, be friends with me, make me feel important. I spent, says Simon, 28 years working in the city and the West End in financial services, and I saw these two driving forces everywhere I worked. People whose main focus was on security and safety for themselves and their family, and people whose main driving force was on using their money to make themselves look attractive to others or look important. If we set our hearts on being safe or being popular or important, then that will dictate what we do with our money. If our main driving force is being secure, then our tendency will be to save too much, to hoard our wealth, to be afraid of taking any risks, and to be mean. These are the people who don't sponsor that person in the office running the marathon, and who don't contribute as much as others to someone's leaving present. They often have plenty of money, but are always looking over their shoulder at the next risk that might be coming along. If, on the other hand, our main driving force is to use our money to attract us to others, then we will spend our money on things that make us look big, successful, attractive, or powerful. These are the people who are happy to sponsor you doing the marathon and are likely to be giving the most money, provided that everyone can see them doing it. They will be introducing everyone to their trophy girlfriend or boyfriend, if they have one, and splashing the cash in the bar to get the attention of the opposite sex if they're single, or maybe even if they're not. Their relationships tend to be geared towards making themselves look big rather than supporting others. I came across people of both these types, says Simon, when I was at work. I can't remember any of them being happy. Those who chased after security were always nervous that they may not have covered all the bases, that there was always something they hadn't foreseen. And those who used their money to make themselves attractive were terribly defensive about anything that would make them lose face and looking for ways that they could use you to maintain their status. Both these types of people were prone to worry, and Jesus gives them good reason to worry in this morning's passage. He points to the risks that are around to attack people's wealth. Do you see the reference in verse 33 to thieves and moths? Now, if you hoard your wealth or splash your cash these days, you might say, well, that was then, but now we have good security and a robust regulatory system. But anyone who had their pension with Equitable Life in 2000 or their savings with Northern Rock in 2007 would know that not all savings are as secure as they seem. And thieves? Well, consider this man. Who is he? Kevin Bacon. Lovely guy, apparently. Now, he's one of the most prolific actors of all time and has made millions from his films. So why is he still doing commercials for EE? Well, who's this man? This is Bernard Madoff, a so-called investment manager, but really a fraudster who swindled Kevin Bacon and various other ultra-rich folk out of their money before dying in prison. With people like that around, anyone who sets their security or popularity on their wealth has every reason to worry. Jesus, on the other hand, tells his followers not to worry. Verse 22, do not worry about your life. Verse 25, who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Verse 26, why do you worry? Verse 29, do not worry. Verse 32, do not be afraid. Jesus instructs his followers not to worry and not to set their hearts on using money for security or popularity. Instead, he points to a better way. But before I get into that, there's something I want to get off my chest, says Simon. When I was a young Christian in my teens and 20s, I had a very poor understanding of the gospel, of what it meant to follow Jesus. I was taught not to do certain things, not to go too far with a girlfriend, not to tell lies. And I was told to do certain things, to read the Bible and to pray. I took these things on as things which were obligations to fulfill in much the same way that I had an obligation to go to work and not drive through red lights. When it came to Christian giving, I was taught to give a certain percentage of my income in much the same way that I was obliged to pay my taxes through PAYE to the government. And that was it. Income given, obligation satisfied. It was an annoying part of being a Christian, which I did to keep the benefits of eternal life. Then I heard a sermon by Tim Keller on the passage we're looking at over the next 2 weeks from 2 Corinthians, and my worldview changed overnight. He said how what we do as Christians is not undertaking obligations like observing road traffic requirements and paying taxes, but instead must be based on an attitude of heart towards God. And our obedience to God's instructions must come from that changed heart. The Apostle Paul writes in his first letter to the church in Corinth, If I give all I possess to the poor, and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. What matters is our hearts, and when it comes to our money, only by our hearts being changed can we have a right relationship with our money. When we planned this sermon series, we also announced that the church was facing a budget deficit of over £150,000 for the year, but we're not interested, first and foremost, in your money. That's not the point. If you don't have two pennies to rub together, you are very welcome here. The point in these sermons is to point out how generous God has been with us and to turn our hearts towards God. Once God has captured our hearts, it can't help but affect how we treat our relationships, our work, our family, and our money. What does Jesus say we should set our hearts on? He says, fix your hearts not on safety and making yourself look attractive, but on God's kingdom. From verse 29, do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. For the pagan world runs after such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Let's break this down. Verse 31, seek his kingdom. Set your heart on it. Make that the primary motivation in your life, not try harder in your Christian life. Shall I read that again? Verse 31, seek his kingdom, set your heart on it. Make that the primary motivation in your life, not try harder in your Christian life. Look at verse 33. Provide for yourself treasure in heaven because, verse 34, because what you treasure is what your heart longs for. I'll read that again. Look at verse 33. Provide for yourself treasure in heaven because, verse 34, what you treasure is what your heart longs for. Can you imagine treasuring God? What might that look like for us? Well, here are some suggestions. It means understanding that God is good and that God is in control. It means understanding and accepting in the deep parts of my soul that God loves me with all my mess and sin and has my best interests at heart and makes all things work together for his plan to bring me to his glory. It means thinking on that glory, all that glory will be mine, totally undeserved. It means that I can draw on God's wisdom in trying to make sense of the world. It means being deeply, deeply grateful that God has accepted me because the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ has answered every question that the devil can ask of me and every accusation he can make. It means that God is making me better to prepare me for heaven, even though I don't quite know how. It means wanting to be part of God's plan in spreading his good news and bringing justice to the world. Have you ever come across someone or something in your life that you look at and think, this is something which is entirely good and which I want to shout about, which I want to support and partner with, which I'm excited about? It's that. It means being totally bewildered but exhilarated that God instructs me to approach his throne with confidence to find grace and mercy. It's who we are as followers of Jesus. So what are the promises made to those who seek God's kingdom? How about for those who might be tempted to hoard their wealth? Verse 24, if God feeds the birds, then he'll certainly do that for you, since you're so much more valuable than the birds. How about for those who might use their wealth to look more attractive or to gain popularity? Verse 28, God gives splendor to the flowers in the field. Will he not do also for you? What does that mean? Verse 32, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. You have the kingdom of heaven, and you have a Father who loves you. What does having the kingdom of heaven mean for those who crave security? It's the most secure place to be. We know that because Jesus died for our sins and rose again from the dead. We are made right with God and accepted by him and will be with him forever. It says in Hebrews 13, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. We have a guarantee from God that he will never leave those who follow Jesus. And he's our Father, someone who knows more than we do, who is more powerful than we are, who we can trust even when things look wrong. What does the kingdom of heaven mean for those who crave popularity and splendor? Well, this is what is promised for us when Jesus comes back again from the book of 1 Corinthians. Listen, I tell you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will all be changed in a flash, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For the perishable must clothe itself with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality. When the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality, then the saying that is written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Who needs flash cars and big houses? We will be imperishable and immortal. Here are the promises that we have from God, the good reasons to seek his kingdom above all things, to treasure it in our hearts, to set our heart on it. And like anything you set your heart on, it affects what you do with your money. If I, says Simon, set my heart on following England playing cricket, then I will think nothing of spending more than is sensible in buying tickets to watch games. And it doesn't seem like a sacrifice because I'm doing what my heart is set on. If I go back many, many years to when I wasn't married, says Simon, and I set my heart on a young lady I have taken a shine to, says Simon, then I will buy her gifts. I will take her to nice restaurants, says Malcolm. And if I find that she enjoys some things that I don't, I will even take her to that thing. Why? Because I've set my heart on her, say Simon and Malcolm. Oh. And if I set my heart on God's kingdom, then I find that my financial priorities begin to match God's. As it says in verse 33, in giving generously and helping out those in greater need than me. This is no longer a burden, but a joy, because we've set our hearts on it. Any more than it's a burden buying tickets to cricket matches at Lord's, or back in the day taking my new girlfriend somewhere she wants to go. It's an outworking of what my heart is set on. We may still be tempted to use our money for security or popularity. There's a reason, after all, that Jesus warns his followers against it, because he knows it's a natural human temptation. But we have an example before us who shows us the way. After all, Jesus had the most secure place in heaven. He was the light of the world, who was with God and was God. He was the agent of creation, and all things were made through him and for him. He had all the splendor and glory that heaven had to offer. But he gave up that security and all that splendor in coming to earth and dying a death, the foulest possible death, and lost his security up to the point of crying, "My God, my God, why have you abandoned me?" He did that so that we could have the security and splendor that he gave up when he came to earth. He became unsecure so that we could be secure. He became despised so that we could be glorious. And he was raised to life in glory so that we have confidence that his work is done and God's promises are true. Seek God's kingdom. Understand the security and splendor that are promised for those who follow Jesus. Set your priorities and hopes in line with God's, in line with what you read in the gospel. Everything else follows from that.